This is the Vet Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem. Music producers talking Philly sports. And we start with the birds, Prem. Last week, hours after we drop our show, literally, the show drops and the birds sign James Bradbury. We didn't see it coming. We thought he was going to be priced out of our range.
Yeah.
And what do you know? He's coming off of a down year. He signs a one-year prove-it deal. Howie special.
Yeah, he wants to win, and he sees what is being built here. Combination of veterans and very young and potent talent. And he sees an opportunity to be a part of a defense that on paper looks like it's going to be very smart, active, and fast.
It does. I mean, literally, this might be the most productive offseason. I mean, the best offseason going into a season since the Super Bowl year.
You have to consider it as that. I mean, the fact that they put all this around Jalen Hurts in one offseason, really how he accomplished what some GMs might be able to accomplish in two offseasons. Like, for example, what the Bills did with Josh Allen, for example.
Yeah.
Where in his third year as a starter, he really started to blossom and become an elite player.
Higher draft pick, though.
Yeah.
Higher draft pick.
Right. Well,
I mean,
true.
So he's you know, allotted that amount of patience and time where Jalen Hurts really hasn't gotten this patience and time. I mean, seemingly he has.
Right.
But there is like a ticking timer behind him on hey, you got to get it done. This
well, yeah,
is
and,
it.
And that's good because now he's got like his best friend playing receiver, which is just amazing. Who happens
that is amazing.
To be, who happens to be a top three receiver probably in the NFL. And not
really?
Only, yeah, A.J. Brown, maybe top five for sure, top five.
Maybe top six.
You go Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, you place those two guys above him.
Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, but when it comes to after the catch, he's for sure top three after the catch.
Okay, after the catch.
But I mean, overall though, his ability to go up and get 50-50 balls is as good as most of these guys
He's pretty good.
I mean, DeAndre
good.
Hopkins probably has better hands.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Goddard and Devontae look like with A.J. out there, you know, getting all the attention.
It's a pick-your-poison type of choice for a defensive coordinator, and if Jalen just develops 20% better than what he was last year, just in terms of his, this is just a random number, like a you know, arbitrary number I'm throwing out there as it relates to him reading defenses.
Yeah.
So if he was doing that at a 61% efficiency rate, I want to see more like 78-79% efficiency rate. You know,
yeah,
in terms
I
of reading the defense, when they break the film down, basically, how many throws is he leaving on the field? I want to see that number cut down
20%. I need to see more consistency with his accuracy. I know he can be accurate. I need to see it consistently.
He's going to be more accurate by virtue of the fact that not only do you have A.J. Brown as your number one option now, but you have the second coverage option on Devontae and the third coverage option on Dallas Goedert probably.
Yeah.
And that just creates so much hidden yardage and production for those guys.
And we're forgetting all about Quez Watkins, who will be out there as well.
Well, Quez is a guy that's always going to have single coverage as a result. So, you know,
he's fast.
You got to
get him one of those little slant routes.
Exactly. Now for example, say Sirianni lines up three wideouts on one side to the left. You're going Devontae, Quez, and AJ all in a bunch. And then you're going to create a screen if you throw like Goddard on a drag route underneath those
guys. I love that.
Things
you can't
like that.
Lose on one of it works every time in Madden.
Roll out play with a bunch receiver set to the right for Jalen Hurts. I mean, that's really what you call maximizing his skill set and then the scheme within the skill set for him.
Now look, we're still weak at safety, but we talked with Connor Miles last week and he's telling us, because I'm not saying he's high, he's telling us that the birds are high on Marcus Epps at safety, that they are looking to him to be a starter and a guy who would really take hold of that position this year.
And hey, you know what? That would fall in line with value finds for Howie. When you look at Jordan Mailata being a value find,
right?
Nakobe Dean probably going to turn out being a value find.
Now, I wouldn't be okay with this Marcus Epps thing if it wasn't for the fact that
they
went out
they
and got
the defense.
James Bradberry.
Right, and not
you
only that.
You put him across from Slay, and right. Now you got something.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but you have Hassan Reddick, who not only rushes the passer, oh, yeah. But he's not terrible in coverage. He's
no,
a solid linebacker.
No, you've improved the D-line for sure.
Yeah, the D-line, and he's more like a hybrid guy because he's going to play at both the first and the second level consistently.
Exactly.
Consistently.
Exactly.
And you got guys like that that strengthen the coverage in the middle of the field, whereas now you really look solid, except for, like you said, when we have to double a receiver
yeah.
with the safety, that's where the weaknesses could come in. When you have to double a guy like a Tyreek Hill caliber guy, which you don't face Tyreek Hill this year.
No.
Which is good.
It's excellent. You don't even face great quarterbacks,
you don't
really.
Face Davante Adams. I don't think we face the Raiders again this year. We just played them.
Nope, we don't face the Raiders.
So, you know, you're going to have an Amari Cooper's out of the NFC East.
Yes, he is.
So you're going to face Terry McLaurin twice a year. You know, you're going to... Who else on the schedule? Really not that many elite receivers on our schedule. You know, it's really not.
No, I don't think
and
so.
And that's been our Achilles
Minnesota,
heel.
Minnesota, we see Justin Jefferson.
Well, you'll see Justin Jefferson, and Cousins always tends to kind of give us fits anyway.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, he's a good... He's
hopefully
a,
our defense has turned around, transformed
yeah.
this year, and won't let that happen.
And they really weren't terrible against
you,
the run.
You know, if you put a little rush on Kirk Cousins, he is done.
Yeah, he gets happy feet.
Yeah, you just need to get this guy to yeah. make mistakes.
Exactly.
That's really any of the good ones. But look... It was a great offseason. Expectations were high. Last week, we went over the schedule. We had him at 11 wins with a pathway to 12.
Without Bradberry.
Before James Bradberry.
I would say now this is a 12-5 football team is where I would put them. I would say it's enough for one more
win.
What
are you cementing as the minimum?
I'm saying the minimum, you know, you got to be realistic. The minimum, because you never know how an NFL season goes, is probably 10. The minimum.
Yeah, the basement.
I would say the baseline is probably 10.
I put him at 10.
10-7 is realistic. And you know what? That probably gets you in the playoffs.
Maybe.
But I think this is more like a 12-win football team.
If they're legitimately a 12-win football team,
it looks that
they're,
way.
They're a playoff team, and they could win the division.
Right. 12-5 could win the division. I would basically, know how I would amend my picks. I would just take one of the games I had us losing to Dallas, I would make as a win. Because I think I might have had Dallas sweeping us. Or I had Dallas who...
and I had us sweeping Dallas.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. So
even
I would
though
do more
I went hard overhead on that decision.
Yeah, I know you did. I would
really
do
know
more
that
of
they'll sweep with Dallas. But, you know.
A split makes sense, though.
I want them so badly to sweep them this season. And I think with this defense, if this defense is what it looks like it's going to be, I don't want to see them turn into the Phillies offense.
Well, no,
that's
the only thing. Well, we'll get into some Phillies offensive numbers.
I'm just saying, you
know,
they built up the Phillies offense. Oh, well, at least they'll score runs. I don't want this defense to be a bust on us after all these additions.
Yeah, well, they're young, but they're also talented with the right amount of experience, I think. Now, obviously... Yeah. You could, when you think about it, right, you're balancing the youth of N'Kobe Dean and Kaiser White with the leadership of Hassan Reddick. You know, you're balancing the youth of Marcus Epps in the secondary with the leadership of guys like Slay and Bradberry now.
True.
And you're anchoring the youth of Jordan Davis up front with the veteran experience of guys like Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave.
Yep.
So Howie really constructed this in a way to allow for his players to naturally develop in a healthy manner.
He's got the vets and the young boys. He put them all together.
And he did the same thing on the offensive line. The pick of Landon Dickerson now, how great does that pick
look?
Oh,
it's a tremendous pick.
I mean, this guy would have been, he would have been a top 10 pick if he didn't have those injury concerns.
Right, but there is a weak hole in the offensive line, though, without Brandon Brooks. Who is it? Is it going to be Isaac Seumalo?
Well, yeah, I think Seumalo is more than serviceable within this offensive system if it is him. It could be a younger guy. They could even bounce Herbig over to guard.
Herbig is gone.
Oh, is he really? Okay.
He
is I must have missed that. He's a big boy.
It went under the radar.
Yeah, I didn't really hear that report.
You'll see. Something will happen with this offensive line, and during this season, they'll say, why did they get rid of Herbig? That'll be a topic.
You would
You're going to hear
because
it.
He's the only other center you had. Now you'd be, well, Landon Dickerson can play center.
Well, Herbig kind of played all over the line. He could play multiple positions.
Yeah, I thought he was a quality backup offensive lineman.
I don't know
why
they let him go.
Interesting.
I found it somewhat surprising.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, either way, I mean, you could be right. I guess it depends on the performance of if they do put Seumalo there, which makes sense because you're going to have Dickerson at left guard, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Right. And then Mylott at left tackle. You know where Lane's at. You know where Kelsey's at. So, yeah, the right guard position would be the only spot of flux, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But Seumalo has veteran presence at this point.
He does.
He's not a young guy anymore.
No, you're right. He is serviceable. He's
In between Kelsey and Lane, I mean, hey, two better offensive linemen could you be playing next to?
Of course.
You know, we have an elite offensive line, I think. Four out of five positions, at least.
They really need to get it together this year. This has to be the year that everything comes together.
You know, it really reminds me. It really reminds me of like early Randall years a little bit, because they had like all these pieces that should be really good. You know, Keith Jackson, Keith Byers, Calvin Williams, Fred Barnett.
I love these guys.
Everyone was
it's
so
my
excited,
team.
But they could never get it done. But they were always in a playoff
they had a
great
mix. Great defense.
Right, that's what this defense has the potential to be.
I know.
When you strengthen the middle of the field defensively that much, like they did, that plays such a role in allowing your corners to truly show why they're lockdown corners, because the linebackers are going to be handling everything in the middle of the field on coverage plays.
True. Nick Foles, he's reuniting with Frank Reich in Indianapolis, but the Eagles were all in and reportedly had a deal on the table. And Nick Foles chose to go to Indy.
Yeah, I understand.
With Frank
though.
Reich.
I get it. He knew it would be quite a circus here if he came back here. And not only that, but I think he, out of respect as well for the Eagles, I think
he loves Frank Reich too.
Right, he loves Frank Reich, but I think what played heavily, in my opinion, in his mind is, oh, if I go back here, it's going to be just.
Nah, it wouldn't be like that, just for the record. I'm not for, you know, and even though it's over, he's in Indy, but like, I'm not for him to be on the Eagles, but like when I see why people are against it, he is a specialist backup quarterback in the NFL.
He definitely is. I guess what I meant was
he's not going to take over a starting job.
Right. No, I know that, but I think what I meant was he maybe didn't want to mess with the chemistry that was developing here in any way.
Well, I know
with the quarterback room
he credits Frank Reich with the way he played that year.
Yeah, so it's mostly Frank Reich, I'm sure, because you know now
and
he knows Nick Foles knows that with Matt Ryan out there for Indy now,
he could get some playing time.
He could get some playing time. I mean, and not only that, but say they make it to the playoffs and Matt Ryan is having like a really bad postseason game. And you have Nick
they won't
Foles.
Hesitate to go Nick
you
Foles.
You got Nick Foles on your bench and in the wild card
right.
round, and you're like basically losing because Matt Ryan is doing what he always usually did in the postseason.
Yes.
Except for one postseason where he made it to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a smart move for Indy. Now they have two
I think so.
Bona fide veteran quarterbacks.
Howie probably thought that he could, you know, flip Minshew for like a fifth rounder or something.
Right. And
which he might have been able
to been
do.
That would have been a net positive for the Eagles. But
right. Yeah. He probably said, you know, I got somebody lined up. Let's sign Foles. Let's bring him back as the backup for cheap, and then I can flip Minshew for another pick next year.
Right,
and, you know, it didn't come together.
Gardner.
Yeah. I haven't been excited about the Birds like this since that year.
Since the Dream Team year.
That's ridiculous now.
Since Chip Kelly's first year for you.
I was a big Chip
guy.
That
year, I remember getting text messages
roof.
From you back then.
Oh, yeah.
About
Chip's
going
to revolutionize the game. And he kind of did. He just, you know, it went the wrong way for him.
Didn't last. I didn't have enough gas in the tank.
I would love to see those texts I sent you about Chip Kelly.
He was sprinting in a marathon. I bet you would like to see those texts.
Oh, tremendous. All right, we're going to talk Birds and eventually go around the bases with Phil Stifel from DSM Media. But first, brought to you by Proline Music, everything for the musician, it's time for Vet Fact.
This is a Vet Fact.
You know, Tech, I scanned the entire 1980s Phillies schedules on May 25th for a win, and I couldn't find one.
Wow.
But they got right off the schneid in 1990 as the decade turned. And on May 25th, 1990, they in fact beat the Atlanta Braves, who they're playing in a series as we speak. They beat the Braves by a score of 5-4 at the Vet. They started fast. They finished fast. They scored right in the first inning, got a run, led 1-0 through the third. But then they would be trailing and get four runs between the seventh and eighth innings to win 5-4. You have some interesting names popping up here on the...
Was Dickie Thon on this team?
Charlie Hayes.
Charlie
Hayes! Driving in three runs.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
You know, Dickie Thon was on this team.
Dickie Thon, one of my favorites of all time.
Going 1-4.
Was the utility man Randy Reddy on this team?
Randy Reddy starting at second base.
Yeah.
Going 1-4. Lenny Dykstra nails. Going 1-4, scoring a run.
90, that's right.
It was kind of quiet in the middle of the game for the Phils, but they did enough late to win. Dennis Cook started the game with 5 2/3, and won. Roger McDowell gets the
Ooh.
Save. But he allowed a run in the ninth, and people were probably sweating at the Vet.
Yeah.
He had 22,162 fans attending the 7:35 first pitch at the Vet. The game took about 3 hours, and the Phils climbed to 24-16.
Wow.
Through 40 games. A little bit different than our current situation.
A little bit.
May 25th, 1990.
Wow. All right, so real quick, the Sixers. The offseason begins with rumors. First, that the Sixers are star hunting. Bradley Beal supposedly wants to play here. Zach LaVine's an unrestricted free agent. Donovan Mitchell might want out of Utah. Do they have any chance at all of getting one of these guys?
Of all the names you named, Donovan Mitchell excites me the most.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Because he's like a real basketball player. That guy do whatever you ask of him.
Yeah, he can play both ways.
You put him out there with Joe, and I guess hypothetically in this scenario, Harden, then you do have something potentially really explosive because Harden doesn't have to be elite Harden necessarily. He's playing third fiddle at that point.
I agree with you 100,000%.
You know what I mean?
I would definitely go after Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell's the clear name to go after.
If he wants to,
I mean, I love Bradley Beal too. I love Bradley, but I hear he wants to go back to Washington.
Well, I don't even know what he wants to do. Last I heard, he was interested in playing here. The problem is, for me, he's a great offensive player, but he's a regular defensive player. He's not a good defender.
Right.
So, Donovan Mitchell plays both ends really well.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell is a superb basketball player. I mean, I don't think that that's going to happen. You would have to part with Tyrese Maxey in a situation like that. You would just have to.
I know.
He's already been declared untouchable by the front office.
Yeah, but if I could get Donovan Mitchell, I would.
If you could get Donovan Mitchell, who's only maybe 4 years older than Maxey, 5 years older than Maxey, still in his 20s.
I try to flip Thibault and Harris.
Thibault, Harris, and Maxey for Mitchell, I would do that, actually. Because then you're going Embiid, Harden, Mitchell, and then you're giving me probably, who's your four going to be there?
I don't know. Anybody.
Paul Millsap.
Or Millsap might be retiring, but Paul Reed might be the guy.
Paul Reed could be a four, probably.
Playing
with Mitchell, Embiid, and Harden, that's serviceable.
I would do it. I agree with you.
Then you would just need another forward to replace Toby's position.
Yeah. All right, second, it's been reported that Doc Rivers and the Lakers have mutual interest. Is this a good thing for us?
Maybe. I told you before recently, and I was really excited when we hired Doc Rivers like you were. He's really kind of lost me in terms of like respect in a sense because he just talks like a...
I know.
Like a complete jag-off, as some people
would say. I just don't know if they'll promote Sam Cassell. He's who I would want to be the head coach. I don't think they're going to do that, and they've made mistakes. Look at all the assistants that were on the Sixers bench that are in the playoffs and really doing big things. And they have one sitting on their bench right now in Sam Cassell.
Yeah.
I totally would hire him as the head coach or promote him.
Yeah.
And let Doc go.
I agree.
I would do that, but they're not going to do that.
No, they're not. They're going to kind of run it back in a sense.
And if Doc Rivers were to go and they were to get a new head coach, it would be Mike D'Antoni. I just know it.
I don't like that guy.
I don't like him either. It just,
What's all the hoorah about this guy, D'Antoni?
I don't know.
You always hear his name, people get so excited.
I don't understand it.
What has he done? Has he ever won a title?
No.
But
no,
his
he
offense
hasn't.
Is like revolutionary, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the
nothing
Chip
in
Kelly
basketball,
basketball.
Nothing in basketball at this point is revolutionary.
Yeah,
it's all
true.
Been done.
It's all
It's just
been
what
done.
Combination are you going to take?
All right, coming up, we hit the Vet line and eventually go around the bases with Phil Stifel next.
Pro Line Music.
Located at 490 Lincoln Highway in Fairless Hills, PA.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician, carrying all major brands. You find a better price, we'll beat it. Offering lessons in person or virtual. On-site repair service center, rentals, recording studio.
Pro Line Music. Call 215-736-8055.
One more time.
215-736-8055.
Yes, sir.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician.
Vet Alumni. And now, it's the Vet Line.
Why don't you answer your phone?
Joined now on the Vet Line by Phil Stifel, the host of Trending in the AM, Monday through Friday at 8:30 AM, also a part of DSM Media. Phil, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. It's a pleasure to jump on and talk with you guys.
Yeah, we feel the same way. So we'll start with the Birds because I think most of the city's fans are most excited about the Birds versus the Phils or the Sixers, and certainly not the Flyers. So with that said, we are really excited for the offseason performance of Howie Roseman. Where do you stand on Howie both this offseason and overall as a GM for the Birds?
Well, you know, so it's really funny because today on my morning show, I hosted a segment for the first time ever of who that we as Philly fans, Philly sports fans, do we owe apologies to? And the number one name that got brought up that we owe apologies to is Howie Roseman.
Yeah,
couldn't agree more.
I mean, I've been as harsh as any on Howie Roseman over the years. But if you really think about it objectively, you know, he took what Chip Kelly did and tried to ruin this franchise, turned it around pretty quickly, got us our first Super Bowl. And even after getting us our first Super Bowl, he was able to navigate the whole Carson Wentz debacle. And look, I mean, he's learning and growing on the job still to this day.
Yeah.
You look at his last two drafts compared to his previous three or four drafts, you see the trends that are changing in how he's picking players. And so overall, big picture, we owe him an apology, but also I think it's exciting to see how he's evolved as a general manager over the last few years, because he's not being the smartest guy in the room anymore. He's just doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Every single time.
Yeah, I mean, the masterful work this draft that just transpired.
Oh, yeah.
You really can't say enough about it. You know,
tremendous.
We were saying A++ because there's nothing else you could say.
And then after that, he goes and gets Bradbury.
So, you know, we feel that obviously safety is the only hole on the team. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, safety is definitely a question mark for me at this point. But he has addressed so many other of the issues on this team. The number one issue with our secondary last year as a whole, not just the lack of talent, but it was simply the fact that we couldn't generate a pass rush.
Right.
A great pass rush makes your defensive backs better. I know the team says they're high on Marcus Epps. I don't know. I saw some good plays from last year. I also saw some, you know, obvious flaws in his game. But if they're high on Marcus Epps, adding Hassan Reddick, Jordan Davis now part of that line, you know, Kazir White's an underrated move that he made. All of a sudden, that secondary is going to be better, whether you add it Bradbury or add it, you know, anybody else to the safety core. You know, they're all going to flourish because of the fact that we're going to have a top tier pass rush now this year.
Absolutely, man. We're excited about that second level, the defense.
They transformed the linebacker crew. I mean,
exactly.
Years that the fans have been begging for them to do this.
Forever.
They finally do
since
it.
Since Trot.
And it seemed like they did it in one foul swoop. They could have done this years ago when the fans have been begging.
I know.
But one foul swoop,
boom.
Brand new linebacker crew.
Unreal.
It's tremendous. But, Phil, it seems like Jalen Hurts has the keys now. Is he going to be the franchise guy after this season?
So you're setting me up there. You didn't say until the after the season, you know. Till the end there. He's got the keys to the Ferrari this year. There's no doubt about it.
This year.
It's rented for the year.
Yes.
He's leasing. Yeah. He's got a one-year lease, you know,
yes,
on his convertible. Yeah, he has the guy. Look, you're talking to one of the biggest Jalen Hurts fans there are out
Same.
There.
Okay,
yeah.
There we go.
I love the intangibles of Jalen Hurts, the off the field, the leadership, the work ethic.
But is that enough? Is that enough?
Well, see, that's the question. Now, I get into it on my show with a lot of the people that watch my show. They're always saying, well, you got to chase the elite quarterback. You got to chase for the Josh Allen, the Tom Brady, the Aaron Rodgers. But there's only so many of those guys out there. So I'm going to answer your question with a question. Is being the 10th best quarterback or the 11th best quarterback in the league, but having the top three intangibles in the league, the work ethic, the leadership, controlling the locker room.
Yeah.
Is being top three in that, and maybe being top 10 in talent, is that enough to win a Super Bowl? And I say, yes, it is.
Probably.
Yeah. That's what we did with Nick Foles. Nick Foles is not a great quarterback.
No.
But he has the intangibles.
Right. But at the same time, you know, that team had so much built-up confidence from a whole year of a run. So that's a little asterisk there with that, you know, for
me. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just, I look at it like that. Look, I think Jalen Hurts will prove that he's improved enough where he will continue, and maybe he'll improve enough where he won't get one of those monster quarterback contracts after this year that some of the other, you know, quarterbacks are getting.
Yeah.
But I think he can prove that he's learned and grown enough in a short 2 years to get the keys for another 2 or 3 years after this year.
Yeah, because you know the way they operate, if you know, midway through the season,
quarterback factory,
they're going to give him the big contract if he's good. I mean, if he's good, they're going to give it to him.
Well, they're going
to
be like 8-2.
Right there, what you just said, because if you look at Howie's new thing now, and he did it a lot last year, he's locking these guys up just in the nick of time where he gets them almost at a price discount.
Yeah.
That Jordan Mailata deal, 4 for $60, $4 million, I think it was.
A steal.
The Bonte Maddox deal, the Dallas Goddard deal.
But when you draft them, it's like having the bird rights in basketball. You'd have the advantage to do that.
You dropped the bird rights.
And I can see them doing that with Jalen Hurts. If he comes out, we have an easy first half of the schedule for the most part. If he comes out and we're 5-2, 6-2, something like that early in the season.
Yeah.
They're going to give him a 3-year extension get him at a discount.
Yeah, you're probably right, because you got to gamble on that type of situation for your salary cap.
The number might be bigger than fans would expect. So
it'll be a bargain if, in fact, you gamble right.
It's going to be team-friendly because those are the only deals Howie does. Even when it's a big number, it's usually team-friendly, except for Wentz, which he magnificently maneuvered out of.
He spun that into A.J. Brown in a lot of respects.
He did. He did.
That's
spin
just
that
crazy.
AJ Brown.
That's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really been a good offseason.
Is it August yet, bro? Like,
yeah,
I can't
I'm
handle
ready
this.
To
I
go.
Can't take it every day.
Now. What's your win total at after that schedule?
Yeah, good question.
Ooh. See, I don't like to predict win schedules till I see training camp.
Nah,
but like today,
way too early.
Today on paper.
Can I say it this way? You know, all the people that listen to your show, you are not allowed to hold me to this if I change my mind in 6 weeks.
Hey, listen, I am from the component of everything is subject to change based on what I see.
See, Phil, let me give you some insight, Phil. Tech is like a completely in-the-moment guy. He could be on the train to the Eagles are going to the Super Bowl 1 second. The next second, they're only going to win 5 games. That is Tech in a nutshell.
Everything is subject to change based on what I see.
Moment to moment, second to second.
Exactly. Precisely.
But I'm the same way. Because I've said fire Howie Roseman, I've said fire this guy, fire that guy. You will not find someone in the podcast content creating or in Twitter world that admits he's wrong more than me.
I hear you.
Well, Tech might be second then.
I'm wrong an awful lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I'll say it. I looked at the schedule. I went up and down it briefly when it came out. Didn't do a deep dive and all, but I saw 11-12 wins.
Yes.
So for your show's purposes, I'm going to show the confidence I have in this team.
Right.
I'm going to say they're a 12-win team this year.
Now, was it at 11 and then they signed Bradbury and you went to 12 as the basement? Or is it 12 regardless of James Bradbury?
12 regardless, because I knew they'd make some form of a move. Whether it was Bradbury or somebody else, I knew they'd bring in, just like they did last year with Steven Nelson.
Right.
You know, I mean, he wasn't a great fit at that second cornerback position. But, you know, I knew they'd make another move there. So, and I'm so confident in this pass rush. Even if they wanted to track McPherson out there, I knew this team was going to be good. So,
good point. You
know, 12 wins because of the pass rush, A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts' progression. And don't forget about Nick Sirianni's progression. He's growing still, too.
Yes. Young coach. The first year's under his belt. He got the playoff jitters out the way already.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. That's huge,
Nick.
Man. The playoff jitters are a real thing.
Yeah.
They're not going to be intimidated this year when they make it to that point.
Before they made the run last year, I was off of Nick. I thought Nick needed to go.
I know you did.
And now I like that.
You got to stick with
Nick.
This guy. He's a young guy. He's going to continue to learn and get better.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys can both say you didn't know who he was when they announced him, right?
Correct.
I was doing some deep dives trying to figure out who this guy was.
I was like, did they just pull a guy off of the corner of Broad and Porter?
It felt that way.
Yeah.
Look, even though they were a massive disappointment, let's flip over to the Sixers. It looks like James Harden will be here, maybe even long term, which would be the worst case scenario. Phil, how do you fix this team?
Oh, man, you want to talk about overreactions and things that, you know, I might admit I'm wrong on this.
Yeah.
But I'm almost semi-blowing it up. And what I mean by
exactly.
that is,
yes,
exactly.
You have to.
I'm keeping Joel Embiid.
Yes.
I'm keeping Tyrese Maxey.
Right.
And every other player, coach, and office administrator, because I put the problem, and I've said it since the day he was hired. What has Daryl Morey ever done to earn the reputation he has, other than trade for James Harden 400 times?
You're
I would agree with that.
I completely agree with everything you just said to a T. Maxey and Embiid, untouchable. Everything else can be bought and sold.
Yep.
I mean, Daryl Morey has spent his entire career trading for James Harden, and that's not an overstatement. That's what he did in Houston.
No, it's not,
He never even made it to the finals in Houston, but he got executive of the year for that. So,
right.
I mean, his track record is just to do one thing. And I spent all year long, you got to make ancillary moves. Even if you want to get Harden, the bench needs, you know, massive upgrades. I mean, there was a point in that closeout game, or not the close, when the Heat closed us out in the third quarter, that Furkan Korkmaz was bringing the ball up in the third quarter when the game wasn't over.
Absolutely.
He was your
preposterous
de facto backup point guard. And I love Furkan because my wife says he's good looking, and he's the reason why I can watch Sixers basketball. But he should not be bringing up the ball in a playoff game.
No.
You're about to be eliminated.
Never.
They thought signing George Niang was going to be all they needed for the bench. Niang is fat and he can't defend.
George Niang.
Well, George Niang's problem is Doc Rivers. It's not Doc. Sorry, I messed up there. Glenn Rivers. I've decided he's no longer Doc. He's old Glenn.
Yeah, he lost the Doc designation. That's definitely Glenn out there.
I said it in the first month of the season that George Niang was going to be useless come the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because he had never averaged more than 16 minutes a game in a season in his career. And he was playing 30 minutes a game early in the season.
Yes. Too many minutes.
I think he had a 40-minute game early this year.
They lived and died by him.
Yeah.
When they were down, he came in the game and was just jacking up threes until he made one. I mean, it was like live or die by George Niang. You can't win like that.
Way
no,
too streaky
not at
of a
all.
Shooter. Not. I mean, I would even... way more prefer a guy. What was that guy's name? Bianelli. We had a couple years ago. Was that
Marco Bellinelli?
Bellinelli.
Italian.
Yeah,
he was tremendous.
See, that's what they were trying to make Niang.
Yeah, and they had Ilyasova, who was also tremendous.
Right.
But if you go back to those teams by playoff time, Bellinelli was burned out too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
JJ Redick at times was burned out because we were relying on those guys too much.
Yes. You can't live and die by the bench guy.
So
I know they look like they're about to get swept out of the playoffs. I look at the Dallas Mavericks. They had a hole on their bench. They went out and got Spencer Dinwiddie. Now, Spencer Dinwiddie doesn't provide much on defense, but he
can
goes
shoot,
out and
though.
Gets 20, 30 points off the bench if you need him to.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can definitely shoot.
And I know everyone says, well, they traded Kristaps Porzingis. Well, that was just the salary. Kristaps Porzingis isn't who he used to be.
Right.
So that was just a salary for salary type thing there. They went out and addressed their biggest need, their bench. Daryl Morey, on the other hand, did not. So while I blame Glenn Rivers for a lot of things, I can't blame him for the team that he was given. So I blame Daryl Morey. So I start the chopping block at the top with Daryl Morey. I get rid of Glenn Rivers. I find a way to trade James Harden. And I go from there. We see what happens.
Okay, so then last Sixers question. Who is replacing Glenn as head coach?
Yes, because I know I have my pick. Who's your pick?
I mean, I guess Sam Cassell. I really, truly believe Daryl Morey is going to try to bring Glenn. I actually think he's going to run it back completely.
Me too.
And just make some minor adjustments to the bench.
Yes, try to get like another Andre Drummond or something.
Ugh.
You look at a lot of the teams out there. You know, the Bucks with Budenholzer and Nick Nurse with the Raptors and all these great younger head coaches that were plucked off of teams, you know, benches. They were assistant coaches. You got to find a younger guy that's got a little bit more energy, a guy that can relate to the players because it's a different NBA than it was 25 years ago when Doc Rivers started coaching. I think Sam Cassell could be that guy.
I agree.
I really do.
I really hope
Lakers come calling and beg.
They've made so many mistakes letting guys that were on their own bench go to other teams and just end up in the playoffs.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And instead of promoting guys from within and building like that, it's just ridiculous.
We wasted way too much time with Brett Brown. Let's not do the same with Glenn Rivers.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay? Yes.
You got two more years, three more years of elite Joel Embiid.
Exactly, man.
Yep.
That's pretty much
it.
Right.
All right, let's go around the bases.
Yeah, you know what time it is.
We're talking about the fightings here. The fightings.
The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's time to go around the bases on the Vet Alumni Podcast.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right.
This team, Phil, they're extremely frustrating. To me, they're a 500 team, few games above, few games below, but that's about it. I don't think they're good enough. And so where do you stand with this team at this point in the season?
I mean, I don't think I have to say anything else other than what you just said. I mean, they're the most inconsistent, you know, they're basically the baseball version of the Sixers. They're a poorly built team.
Yes.
I don't blame Dombrowski for all of it because he was kind of left with no farm system. He was kind of left with some bad contracts like Didi and, you know, JT Realmuto's contract and stuff like that. I mean, but what do you do? Because the Philly situation is different than the Sixers is you just signed a lot of these guys. You can't trade Castellanos. You can't trade Schwarber yet. You can't trade JT because who would take $24 million a year for a 230 hitting catcher, you know, that's, you know, what, 33, 34 years old? I mean, it seems like the wrong answer, but it also seems like the only thing that might light a spark because there are talented players on this team. They're just literally all underperforming. And that's fire Joe Girardi. And when they hired Joe Girardi, I said it right from the get-go. I didn't think it was a smart hire because I didn't think he wanted to coach anymore. He went a good 3+ seasons after he left the Yankees, not coaching. He was very happy at MLB Network,
right,
doing his little post-game analysis, collecting a little paycheck. John Middleton just opened up the checkbook and paid him, I don't know, what, $8, $9 million a year to come out of retirement?
Right.
He couldn't refuse it.
Yeah,
but he doesn't seem like he's into it.
Well, he's kind of stoic. He's kind of stoic sometimes. And, you know, I kind of differ with you guys a little bit only because – yeah, you played 42 games, and, you know, you're 2.5 games out of what the third wild card would be, and you have 130-plus games left. You're top 10 in pretty much every offensive category. The issue has been you can't win one-run games. You're not going to win 3-2. You're not going to win 4-3 because of one specific part of the team, and that's the relief pitching.
Yep.
That's it. If you have good relievers, then this team right now is not 20-22 or 20-23 or whatever they are. They're probably more like 27 wins because they've lost 6-8 games between the 7th and 9th inning when they're winning by one run. And the great teams like the Dodgers, the Astros, the really good teams like maybe the Rays, they're going to win those games 2-1, 3-2 because the pitching is good enough late. Where the offense doesn't have good nights because it's baseball, the pitching picks it up. To me, Phil, that's the issue with this team.
Right. And there's a little bit of an issue there. I mean, Corey Knebel is not a closer.
No.
He's a setup guy.
Right.
But the problem is, I disagree with you on a little bit. They wouldn't have 27 wins. Maybe they'd have 22 or 23 wins. So maybe you just flip-flop the wins in the loss category there.
Maybe. I mean, they've literally blown six games by the late innings
pitchers. I don't have the stats in front of me, but they've been shut out, what, 6 times this year?
Yeah.
They've only scored
one
run 10 times. I don't care how highly ranked they are offensively. When 10 to 12 games already, so a quarter of the games you've played, you've scored 1 or 0 runs with this offense, that's not good enough. It just goes to show how streaky. They literally have 9 guys in their lineup that all are streaky hitters. You do not have one consistent baseball hitter in that lineup. It's just a bunch of guys that are going to go 10 for 20 and then 2 for 20. And the problem is they're all lining up and they're all going 2 for 20 at the same time, right.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. I would say Segura.
Spread out.
I would say Segura and Castellanos are probably the best pure hitters on the team in terms from an average perspective.
Yeah, Segura, though, seems Segura is a good always hitter.
But you're right, though. I mean,
he gets a lot of underrated, or gets a little unnecessary heat. Segura is a good baseball player.
Yeah, he's a very good baseball player.
One of our best right
one
now.
One of the issues with this team is that they're 6th in the league in strikeouts. I mean, they strike out the 6 most times in baseball. That is going to affect greatly when you have runners in scoring position.
Absolutely.
But isn't that the result or the side effect of just having a ton of power hitters in the lineup?
Yeah, because then...
Power guys strike out a lot.
Right, because they have the 4th highest slugging percentage in baseball. I mean, they're only trailing the Angels, the Yankees, and the Dodgers in the power hitting department. Yeah, all first place teams. So what does that tell you? That tells you, to me, that tells me that the issue really, as much as they are streaky, you're blowing games when you only win. They've only won five games this year when scoring four runs or less.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. Even big the Dodgers problem. Are going to win 2-1 games.
Yeah.
Even the Yankees are going to win 3-2 games.
Better pitching. Talk
we
about
do
teams
not
better
win.
Pitching.
Yeah, we can't win low scoring games. And when you're talking about October baseball, you have to be able to win pitching battles that the Phillies just would not be able to win as they're constructed. So, you know, what do you think, if you had to pick the one primary need this offseason, because you know what they are, who they're going to have mostly, what's the one thing the one type of player or guy you would go after? And even if it means losing a guy like Hoskins in a deal, who would you go after?
I mean, I don't know about a specific player. Obviously, I want a closer. I do.
Right.
I want
exactly.
a real legit
exactly.
closer.
That's what I was trying to get you to say, because I agree.
But the problem is, you don't really need to spend big money on a closer as a team until you're really a legit contender.
True.
Until you're really got a real shot at least making the final, like you're the NL championship round, you really don't need that closer. You don't want to waste that money just yet at that spot. I want a true, real leadoff hitter.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Mean, even if Mickey
center
Mignone
field has been an issue
to be
too.
Our center fielder,
right?
Yeah, they don't even have a leadoff hitter. Yeah, not on this.
Kyle Schwarber, come on.
No. Your leadoff hitter, really, honestly, if Roman Quinn could just hit 250,
yes.
If he just hits 250, he's a leadoff guy. But he hits 185.
If he played 200 games in 3 years, he'd be a good leadoff hitter.
true. But I don't want my leadoff guy hitting, in the 100s.
No,
that's like Kyle Schwarber.
He should be hitting 285. A leadoff hitter should be hitting 285 on a good baseball team. On a good team.
I got destroyed on social media and on my show from listeners because the day we signed Kyle Schwarber, I went on my show and on social media and said, we just got the bronze medal of the post-lockout free agency. And everybody told me how great Kyle Schwarber was. Oh, yeah, he's all right, but it's the bronze medal. Do you want to win the bronze or do you want to win the gold?
Fair.
Went out and got the bronze medal.
Then they went out
and got Castellanos as well, which kind of made things a little better, but come on, people think Kyle Schwarber was going to be a regular leadoff hitter and successful at it. Come on now,
yeah, that's goofy. He's a five hitter. He's a five hole hitter. He's a patented five hole hitter because he's going to be in the top 10 in the NL in home runs.
But Prem, you're right about relief pitching because I'll say this: when a game is close or we might be down, but it's like 2-1 or 3-1.
Exactly.
He's still got a game. And Girardi, I don't know what his obsession is to bring in James Norwood.
What is it with this Norwood guy?
I don't understand it. Why? Why James Norwood?
I'd rather Nelson.
I don't even like Nelson. Is there anybody available?
What's up with Dominguez?
Where's Sir Anthony?
He should be your seventh inning guy, and then eighth inning you just do what makes sense. Alvarado is horrendous.
Alvarado
is terrible. This guy can't throw a strike to save his life.
I don't know what it is, but yet when I look at the relief pitchers, I'm just like, come on. You continue to trot out these guys. I don't know what to say.
Winning teams ain't doing that. I'll say this, gentlemen. There are 130-something plus games left. They're 2.5 games back of the third wild card spot. There's so much baseball to play that even as they are presently constructed, it's realistic that they do enough to get that third spot because it's not going to be a 90-win team in that third spot. It's probably going to be like an 85 to 88-win team in that third spot.
So I know I'm here on your show, but can I ask you guys a question?
Absolutely.
Because this is a topic I talk about almost every day on my show. And it's
perfect.
And it's nauseating sometimes because it's so frustrating. But I said at the beginning of the season that they were going to be right where they are now. And then near the trade deadline, they'd be just close enough to go out and make a move,
whether it's to get
a center fielder, closer, whatever it may be. But the problem is, who do you trade to get that? Because there really isn't anybody of value that you're probably realistically willing to trade.
Right.
Because Rhys Hoskins isn't going to get you a shutdown closer for the playoffs.
No, not the way he's currently swinging a bat.
Edi Gregorius might get you a middle reliever.
Yeah.
Who on our team can you honestly trade?
I hate to say it. Nobody wants to trade him now.
Alec Bohm.
Yeah. Nobody wants to trade him.
See, Alec Bohm.
Were you listening to my show this morning? That's exactly what I said.
But he can hit, though. The guy can hit. He had a sophomore slump, okay, but the guy can hit. He's showing that he's
nobody wants to hear that Alec Bohm would have the most value and make the most sense.
He would have to be the guy. He would have to be the guy because you can, not easily, but you can put JT in the two hole if you want. You know, if you're going to do that, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know,
you can play Camargo over third base. You can play Stott at third base.
You have moves to make, and if you could flip Alec Bohm for a top-tier reliever on a bad team, which you could do because he's a young guy, a team like the Baltimore Orioles, for example.
I'd seriously consider this. If this is what it was...
If that's what it takes.
If that's what it takes.
Because relief pitching is clearly what you need.
Yeah, I can't take James Norwood. You got to do something with that. It can't be
I
like that.
I keep saying on my show, you got to take one step back before you take two steps forward.
Exactly.
And we're hovering in that no man's land. We're hovering in that Andre Iguodala Sixers regime type frame where we're just going to barely make the playoffs or just barely miss the playoffs. You got to take a step back before you can take a step forward.
Yeah.
Maybe Alec Bohm is the guy that you got to move.
Could be it. Could be it. I mean, it's going to be interesting because I'm more of a watch a significant amount of baseball guy and then react. I mean, I want to see what they look like in August because this schedule, if you look at this schedule, Phil,
it's
very brutal up through the Milwaukee series, which ends on June 9th. And then you get Arizona at home for three. I know we don't play Miami great, but you still get Miami at home for three. Then you get five in Washington, two in Texas, and then it gets back to the tough teams with San Diego and Atlanta. But you have that stretch in the middle of June where you can realistically go like, you know, 12-5 over a 17-game stretch, and you're right back in the mix. Now, the question is, can they do that against bad teams? Because they can do it against good teams. You won the season series against the best team in the National League for what it's worth.
Look, I'm not trying to be negative. I was super positive on the Eagles.
Right.
But I'm not trying to be negative on the Phillies because they're my team. But have they shown you anything significant enough that could give you the confidence to say that in a 17-game stretch they can go 12-5?
Because
we know. I mean, they might be going up against bad teams eventually, but they're not a great team. They're an average team. So an average team against these bad teams, maybe they go 10-7.
Well, here's something to think about, right? I'm looking at the schedule. Your last six games, you got three in Washington and three in Houston. On paper, you think, wow, the Astros, oh my God, that's going to be hard. I'm going to venture to say that the Astros at that point in time are probably going to have their playoff spot kind of locked up and loaded, and they're not really going to have to play for anything those three games. And you have a chance. If you're only two, three games out of that third spot at that point, like what I'm getting at is, we're not going to really truly be able to react to the 2022 Phils until like mid-September because they're going to be good enough, even their currently positioned the way they play, they're going to be good enough to just be a few games out of this third spot until September.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going to be talking about, oh my God, they have a chance if they win seven of their last 10 to get a spot in the playoffs. And then you're rolling the dice with a puncher's chance, like Rocky Balboa against Apollo Creed.
Right.
Because that's what it'll be like. We'd be super underdogs against anybody we play because we probably have LA Dodgers in round one or one of these impossible teams to beat. You know, I mean, the Dodgers are really the only team that is impossible to me in the playoff scenario. Every other team, if you're there, is realistic to give a shot. Give a run to.
Okay.
In the National League.
I guess.
If you're there.
Listen.
You know what I mean, Phil? Maybe I'm a glass half full guy. But
you
I'm
are a glass half full.
Glass three quarters full with that.
All right. I can't argue with you there, Phil.
All right. So, I got to keep my negativity for something, okay? I've been so positive on the Eagles.
I've been told
by people I'm too positive on the Eagles.
Nah, you know
so
what,
gotta
though?
I got something negative in my life, man. I got to have that balance.
That's fair, because we know it's the Flyers as well. But that's all we're going to say about the Flyers. So, Phil, before we let you go, give me a Veterans Stadium memory.
So I grew up in a very humble, blue-collar family in Delaware County. Dad only took us to Sunday games at the Vet. Okay, in the late 80s, early 90s. $5, upper deck, sit wherever you want, move down as the game goes on.
Yeah.
Big family. So that's what we did almost all Sundays, two, three times a month, all summer long. We got to go 1 year, 1991. It was in July. I don't have the date up in front of me. He took us to a fireworks show in July.
The best.
Yes.
The absolute
best. It was the only time he ever took us to a fireworks show. That year, we had a very little-known pitcher. He had a very famous brother, but he wasn't, you know, very good. Kyle Abbott. He went 1-14 that season for the Phillies.
I remember Kyle Abbott.
That one night in July, He went 5 2/3 against the Dodgers, gave up 5 runs, but still got the W because our offense like exploded for runs that night.
Yeah.
And that's like a little tiny weird random thing.
Love it.
But because my dad took us to our only fireworks game, the memories of going to games with my dad and stuff like that, that night is my favorite memory ever going to the Vet. And I've got a lot of them.
That's beautiful.
But that's my
man.
Favorite memory of going to a sporting event at the Vet.
That's beautiful. That's fantastic. It possibly was July 15th against the Dodgers when they won 9-8. I'm looking at the schedule now. It could have been that game. Yeah, you know what? In the same era, I was being brought along to the nosebleeds in the 700 level frequently by my father because we can get in for like $6.
Yeah, of course.
$5.
Yeah.
You also bring a whole cooler in. You didn't have to worry about $10 beers or $5 waters.
Yeah, you know,
we'd pack an entire cooler, and we'd sit up there in the upper deck. We never missed a Fanatic. Back in the 80s and 90s, they used to give these cheesy hats for the Fanatic's birthday.
These
really great gifts out. I always wondered why I got beat up in school, like the first week of school. It's because I rocked that Fanatic's birthday hat on the first day of school.
That would do it.
Who is this loser? Let's beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, yes. That's back when bullying was potent and acceptable.
Oh, yeah.
Bullying was acceptable.
Yeah, I never wore that hat again after that, you know?
Yeah, man. Phil, we love chopping it up with you, man. We'll have to have you back on with us down the line.
Anytime, my friends. Anytime.
And for our listeners, if you're interested in checking out Phil's work, find him on Twitter. It's at Beard of Knowledge. Now it's Beard and then the letter A, Knowledge.
The beard. That's what I'm talking about.
Thanks again, Phil. We'll talk with you real soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great night.
Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie.
Men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
Numbers don't lie.
Look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie.
Keeping it real. 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 Keeping it real.
Numbers don't lie.
Well, you know, we covered a lot of Phil's with Phil. And
yeah.
I thought it was very appropriate that I had already prepared a first quarter Phillies numbers rundown.
It's the perfect segue into it.
It really is. So we're going to cover hitting and pitching, of course, and go over some of the rankings and some thoughts on these rankings here and what they actually mean. So the Phillies are actually fifth in all of baseball with a .249 team batting average, which is very high.
Yeah.
The problem is their on-base percentage is only .313, which is 14th in the league, which is interesting, right? You have the fifth highest batting average, but only the 14th highest on-base percentage. And that's because they're not walking a lot. They're striking out instead. They have the sixth most strikeouts in Major League Baseball, 377 Ks. So that's kind of the breakdown there between why is the batting average so high, but they're not, their on-base percentage is so low.
Right.
But they're seventh in Major Leagues in home runs with 48, tied for sixth in doubles with 71, tied for sixth in hits with 351. This isn't all of baseball. Tied for eighth in all of MLB in runs with 191. And they're actually fourth in the league in steals with 27. So they do a lot on the bases. They're just not walking enough to be on the bases more. The slugging is fourth in the majors, as we mentioned earlier, only behind three of the best teams in baseball. And the OPS is seventh in Major League as well. I mean, they're top 10 in all, just about literally every offensive category. But the issue is, again, the pitching. You have a 3.89 ERA, which is 18th in all of baseball.
Yeah.
But actually, it's only 0.60 runs behind top five in the league. Top five in the league are around 3.3 ERAs.
Yeah.
3.30. So it's a very small window that differentiates these teams pitching-wise.
Yeah.
It's everyone's in between 3 and 4 runs, basically. You know, with some are a little over 4 runs at the bottom of the league. But it makes a big difference when broken up over a significant amount of games. They've allowed 340 hits, though, 11th most in baseball, which is why you're losing games late, because there's a lot of base runners late.
Yes.
And that is the issue. The WHIP is the 19th highest in baseball. For our listeners, that's walks and hits allowed per innings pitched. It's 1.28, but it's only 0.22 behind the top spot in all of baseball, which is held by the Dodgers. So they have a 1.06 WHIP. We have a 1.28 WHIP.
Yeah.
It's literally a fifth of a hit or a walk in inning difference than the top spot in baseball for that number. The WHIP is usually the most accurate indication of the amount of base runners that you're allowing. So it's interesting to me. But They also have the sixth most strikeouts in all of the big leagues, Tech.
Yeah.
You've K'd 383 hitters.
Like we said before, it's the power aspect of this lineup.
It's the power aspect of the lineup, striking out a lot, not walking a lot, and then it's the late inning pitching, allowing a lot of base runners, and that's why you're basically a 500 team.
Yeah.
So, really, that's the behind-the-numbers look. I mean, your average against is really bad, too. Opposing teams are hitting 241 against the Phils, which is 21st worst in the league. The Dodgers lead the league, only a 213 average against, but we're hitting 300 against them.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's what, this is just another example of how baseball is, why it's baseball, because you really can't explain something.
Yeah, this year, even though this segment is called Numbers Don't Lie, the numbers are lying
numbers
a little bit for the Phillies.
The numbers kind of lie a little bit.
They're lying
a little
bit for the
Phillies.
No, it's
not that they lie, it's that you have to translate them. And we kind of just did that. You know, you're top 10 in every offensive category, but you're walking the bottom third of the league is the amount of walks you have.
Yep.
So you're not on base with those free passes because you're striking out in place of that, which leaves the guys that are getting hits to put you in the top 10 of all these categories
stranded.
On base. Stranded.
Yep.
And it's happening too frequently in games where you got to score 9 runs to win.
A decade of this.
You got to score 8-9 runs to win in too many of these games, though, because of the relief pitching.
Yeah.
You're not going to win 8-6 a lot of the time.
No, you're not.
You know, you're gonna
not
win.
With this team.
You're going to win 6-5 if you can hold them to 5 runs. There's a lot of games that Phillies have scored 6, 7, 8 runs that they lost this year. And good teams are not losing those games.
No, it's unacceptable.
So that's really the issue here. We broke it down with Phil. We broke that all down. But one thing we're missing is the psychological aspect of team chemistry.
Yeah.
Have they hit their stride yet? Not by any stretch.
No.
Because their biggest win streak is, what, 3 games this year, I believe.
Yeah. That's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
They're just not good enough.
You have
enough.
To string wins together. You know, so the segment is called Numbers Don't Lie, but they kind of deceive a little bit in this case, Tech.
They're being deceptive this time.
They are. I'm a little disappointed about that. Numbers don't lie sometimes.
What we gonna do right here is go back.
You wanna hurt me? Go right ahead.
Your words cut deep.
It's quite deep.
Turn it up. It's Deep Cuts with Tech and Prep.
Well, it's the debut of a new segment we like to call Deep Cuts, where Prem and I talk shop, basically. First off, Prem, what are you listening to?
I'll tell you what, Tech. Today was a 70s soul day for me.
Wow.
I had made a station out of the Isley Brothers.
Okay.
You know, rolling with some Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby Caldwell.
Tremendous.
Very, very Tremendous. Good listening. Very, very good listening experience.
Oh, yeah.
It's where it all started. And you'd be surprised when you start a station with, say, an Isley or a Teddy Pendergrass.
How many samples you
the
hear?
The Dramatics. Yeah, how many tracks you hear that basically the entire drum and bass lines were just regurgitated on hip-hop
samples.
Tracks.
Like, right.
See, it's different. See, me and you as producers, I've always been a type of sample producer when I sample. I'm not looping anything. I'm making new loops out of sample hits usually.
Right, okay.
Occasionally, I'll loop a sample for a hook. I'll do both, too.
Yeah, I'll do both.
But, I mean, Diddy is the most guilty of it. I mean, Juicy,
take it, right?
Juicy Fruit. That Juicy Fruit
yeah,
record,
it's like, just
they
loop
just
it.
Took the whole record, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And then just tweaked a few things.
Yeah, just put a kick and a snare on
so,
there.
So, yeah, I've been on my soul kick all day. I'll tell you what, for productivity, where you're just working at the computer, doing things with something like that in your ear, very, very nice experience.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I'm at. Where are you at?
I listen to tech radio all day like I always do, but I was listening to a cutoff Method Man's Meth Lab 3 album.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal.
Came out a couple weeks
ago.
A cut called Butterfly Effect featuring Philly native RJ Payne.
Love it. Love it.
Formerly known as Rain Man. It's a certified banger.
That record is serious. And
that's
the Capadonna record is dope, too.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
There's one with Kiss on there, Switch Sides. Tremendous.
Method, 50-plus years old.
Method Man is a classic legend.
Yeah, man.
Who
I mean,
still puts out good albums.
I used to listen to that Judgment Day tape, like,
oh yeah,
just rewind it and just go right back over and over again on my Sony Walkman.
Oh, of course.
In 98.
I had the Mega Bass one, I had the yellow one, the sports one, you know.
Yeah. That one was like $64.99.
Yes, it was. It was more expensive. That's right.
Yeah, man.
Okay, so I have my own scale, the tech scale, my own way of measuring what I think is a banger.
Okay, good.
So with that said, let's start with a couple albums that just dropped. Kendrick's Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. What are your thoughts on this? Have you heard this album?
I've listened to the whole album, and as a Kendrick Lamar fan, but a purist for Kendrick Lamar, my baseline for Kendrick is like the type of delivery and flow and beats that he did on the Compton project when he was featured.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yep.
And some of his harder hitting tracks, like on the last project, which was just absolutely phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Amazing project. Lust was one of my favorite tracks off of that project. He is trying too hard to be artist revolutionary type now, as opposed to just spit, bro. Like, you're one of the illest in the game. Like, give me a dope flow, pick the right beats. You can still do the same thing. You can still deliver the same message.
I'm shocked.
Just make your fans excited to pop it on and bump it when they get in the whip. There's only 3-4 tracks that I'll bump on that project.
Listen, I am shocked, but I couldn't agree with you more on this.
I thought so, bro.
I heard this album, and I was instantly, you know, because, look, I have two modes when I listen, right?
Yeah.
My initial listen.
Yeah.
On the phone, flipping through YouTube.
Right.
I skim through it real quickly to get an idea.
Get an idea.
And then I start from track one, and I let it go.
Let it go. Same.
So on the initial skim through, I couldn't have been more let down.
I know.
And disappointed.
I know.
Now, listen.
N95 is dope, though. That track is super dope.
And the one with Ghostface, where I think he's talking about his aunt becoming a man.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, he says a lot of stuff. His lyrically, it's tremendous.
It is.
It's the backdrop. It starts to feel like a Gil Scott-Heron album instead of what you just said, beats and bars. Like, I know you got that, bro. Why are you giving me this?
Show us why you're top five all time. Show us.
Right.
You know, like, you can, and Black Thought is a perfect example of someone who balances messages like that Kendrick's trying to deliver.
The best of all time.
With still giving
us
beats and verses that are hard.
Right.
That are going to get you excited as a hip-hop fan from our era.
Exactly.
You know, people between 35 and 60, really, that are hip-hop fans from the real era of hip-hop.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
I couldn't agree with you more on this.
Good.
I feel like it's way too overrated, called a masterpiece by critics. It makes me think back in the day.
Because that's the agenda, Tech. That's that. Honestly, I hate getting political.
I know.
But that's the whole agenda with a lot of this shit.
Let me tell you, I understand completely what you're saying. But this does, the way the critics have acclaimed this, it reminds me of Outkast's Aquemini and how critically acclaimed it was. Now, the difference is that album was a masterpiece.
Right.
Bars and beats.
Yes.
That's what you had.
Yes.
That's what Kendrick's missing.
See, Kendrick's doing that lazy, wine flow, that whiny, lazy flow.
Yes.
That he did on the Loyalty song. In the last project, but he's doing that too frequently.
Exactly. It's like when Eminem was doing the Triumph
album. Give me how we did on the Dre joint on Compton when he comes in.
Tremendous.
You look at my lifestyle. I'm living my life now.
Yeah.
Attitude pipe down.
Yep.
Fuck it with ice now. That is just
I agree with you 1,000%.
That flow from Kendrick, that's what we want to hear from him.
That's what we want. He's not giving a stat on this project.
Yeah,
it's not what it is.
I agree.
And I was disappointed, you know, massively. I think it's overrated because they're so infrequent, hip hop artists.
Yeah.
It's it doesn't, they don't, there's only a handful of them. That's it. And Kendrick is the king of them all.
I know.
But I remember when Eminem, what you said about Kendrick doing that one whiny voice, Eminem did the Triumph the Dog sound, the whole, remember, he
them,
did it once as a gag.
It was on encore.
And then he did it for two albums after that.
I know.
Right.
Exactly,
so,
bro.
That's what Kendrick is doing. So look, you gave him 4, right, out of 18 cuts?
Probably about 4 cuts.
Okay, I was way more generous. I gave him 8 out of 18.
Okay.
With 6 being what I would
not. I would only put 4 on playlists I'm building.
I hear you.
Basically.
Me too. Only four made it on Tech Radio.
And I loved his last album. His last album is a top 10 album since the year 2000.
Right. Yeah. No,
honestly.
I agree with you on
I'd
that.
I'd go 2000 and go from there forward. That last Kendrick album is top 10.
He gets 8 out of 18, which is a 44.4 rating on the Tech scale. For this album.
You're just going percentages here.
I'm going percentages.
Batting average.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly
all right,
what I'm
that's,
doing.
That's fair. That's
all
a
right,
fair
and then the second album I wanted to tackle briefly is OT The Real and Static Select is Maxed Out album.
Very much enjoyed listening to that album.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, in my look,
it was nostalgic to me. It made me feel like, you know, 03 Prem cruising down Red Lion Road when I had it on.
Look, I'm going to say this. I'm going to preface it with, I really think OT is dope.
He is.
He's from Philly.
He's a niche, though. He's a niche rapper.
Right. In my era, OT The Real is missing something.
Yeah,
that would make him great. But
you.
In this era, he's pretty dope.
Kind of like
I'm
Lloyd Banks.
Kind of
like Lloyd
is.
Banks is dope, but he's missing something too.
Yes,
because there's no diversity in his flow.
Right.
Similar.
But he was like the king of New York for a brief time.
Sure
Lloyd
was.
Banks. But look, this album. This is, first of all, Static Selector, one of the best pure hip hop producers working today.
Absolutely is. You know.
This is an album you can put on and play all the way through. I got 7 out of 10 that I'm feeling on this.
Yeah.
Right now, I got one in rotation on Tech Radio.
Okay.
It's the one with
okay.
Freeway Hardcore, tremendous record.
Where can our listeners find Tech Radio?
It's coming soon. It's
30, so this is in the beta version.
Well, yeah, we're in the beta version. I'm at 34 continuous hours of nonstop, either the era or approved by the era.
So,
embraced
okay.
by
All right, so
the era.
TBD, maybe on the next time we do this segment.
Soon.
Have some more info.
Soon. I'm trying to get to 48 hours, 2 days continuous, before you hear a track repeat.
And these are original remixes, basically.
Well, no, not all.
Some of them are original.
It's basically
remixes.
Curating what I would consider the massive records that are on the tech scale
I've heard some of it.
You've heard some of it.
Yeah,
I played some remixes too. There's some remixes on there. But I'm gonna give OT The Real and Static Selecta a 70% on the tech scale.
In line with where you're at. The beat selection, OT did a good job with the beat selection.
Yeah.
The flows match the vibe of the album consistently throughout.
Yep.
You know, he's talking about being locked up and serving on the corner.
He just spits the way that I want to hear.
He's authentic. The thing about OT The Real is he is his name. He really is real. Like, he's authentic.
Absolutely.
You believe him when he spits. And Static is just phenomenal as a producer. And funny story, he had me on Shade 4-5 in 2013.
Tremendous.
When I produced the Cool Keith record.
There you go.
And we're on the subway after leaving. We're going to a function that he had to go to.
Yeah.
And I had to pee so bad, Tech. And I was on the subway, and my bladder was about to burst.
Right.
I didn't know about the third rail on the subway.
And
I went and peed between the boxcars. And I came back in, and Stat was like, yo, you know you could have got electrocuted if the third rail came by. And I said, well, thanks for telling me before I went to pee.
Yes.
Or not.
You could have been electrocuted.
And he seemed okay with it.
Yeah. At the time,
he was
perfectly fine with it. He let you know after the fact.
Static. Yeah, good dude, though. Been to the casino a couple times, too, and he lost some money. Maybe that's why. I think that's why he named the album Lucky 7.
Okay.
He was an avid gambler around when he put that out.
Ah.
A little bit of background info for our listeners. But shout out to Static. I know we ain't going to listen to our show, but shout out to Static anyway.
Right. Listen, dope album. All right. Let's get to the picks, because I know you had a decent week last week. Was it a decent week?
It was a decent week.
All right, there it is. Picks coming up.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
These games are a blowout, a human lock. You can bet your children's unborn children on these games!
Prem's MLB Picks. All right, so it was a decent week.
Yeah, you know, I got back on the right side of things here. A 2-1 week brings me to 6-6 overall through 12 picks.
All right, there we go.
So, you know, it's early in the season.
Like the Phils, you're 500.
Pretty much. You know, last week the Phils did beat the Padres 3-0. I had that as a W. And the Twins pounded the Athletics 14-4. Had that as a W. My only blemish, Tech, and I got a real issue with this, is the Angels lost to the lowly Rangers 6-5 as the Rangers walked off in the 10th inning after the Angels blew a late lead. So 2-1 instead of 3-0 would have been 7-5 right now.
Would have been much
nice. But you know what? 6-6 is not terrible.
No.
I'm floating, and here are this week's locks.
Locks.
You know, I like games between good teams. Sometimes they're hard to pick, but I got one for you that I think is a very solid pick. The Brewers go to San Diego to play the Padres, and they're both good squads. Padres have won 5 games in a row.
Yeah.
They're playing really good baseball. They just swept the Giants in San Francisco. The Brewers lost two of their games going into the San Diego series. I like the Padres to handle business tonight in San Diego. Lock.
Lock.
Next tech, you got a battle of the Sox. Got the White Sox and the Red Sox. And I'm going to go with Chicago. I think that they have a better pitching matchup here for the White Sox, even though the Red Sox actually absolutely pounded the White Sox last night. I like the Chicago White Sox to get a W here. You have Lucas Giolito on the mound.
Oh, yeah.
And his 2.84 ERA, 44 strikeouts as a minor league leader as well. And Boston trots out Rich Hill. I like the White Sox to handle business at home. Lock.
Lock.
Lastly, Tech, another battle of good teams. You have the New York Mets and their first-place record in the NL East going out to play the San Francisco Giants. And I like the Giants to get the W. You have New York Mets trotting out one, Thomas Zapucki, for his first big league start in San Francisco. And San Francisco has had a tough go of it, losing five games in a row. They're on the schneid, and they're ready to win against a rookie pitcher.
Yep.
I like San Francisco to do what they do at home, even though Gabe Kapler and the Giants, that's right. Even though the Mets bring in the league's second-best batting average, and their pitching is top 10 as well. The Mets are really a strong team. I like San Francisco to get the win at home in classic baseball fashion, low-scoring game. And there you go. That's your lock. Giants over the Mets. So to recap, we got the Padres over the Brewers.
Lock.
The White Sox over the Red Sox.
Lock.
And the Giants over the Mets.
Lock.
This has been Prem's MLB Picks.
See you next week.
Vet Alumni.